The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hello everybody, this is Loose Cannons. We're going to be discussing 1932's Blonde Venus, directed by Joseph von Sternberg, and we're going to do a little bit different format to clean up the beginning today. The person who picked the film is going to give a short overview of the plot, and then we're going to go into our normal dislike discussion. So Ilya is going to start us off.
Okay, right, so Blonde Venus was directed by Joseph von Sternberg, and it's one of his collaborations with Marlene Dietrich. The plot really basically deals with Dietrich as a German cabaret singer or some kind of stage performer who is picked up by an American played by Herbert Marshall, I think, and who ends up marrying her and taking her to the United States, and they have a kid together. And Herbert Marshall is a scientist, and he is working on some kind of new invention, and he's like keeps being about to discover something, but then he discovers he's actually really sick. And he needs a cure, and the only doctor who has it is in Germany, so they need money for that cure, and they don't have any. So Marlene Dietrich has to go and perform again to earn that money for him, where she goes to this seedy kind of nightclub, does a really racist kind of performance there, and is picked up by Cary Grant, who offers her the money, seemingly just because he's so in awe of her, but obviously because he wants a piece of her. Marlene takes the money, gives it to her husband, he goes back to Germany, and her and Grant get closer in the interim. When the husband is cured and wants to come back, she is torn between Cary Grant and him, ends up fleeing both, running away with the kid, and being chased by detectives sent by her husband to track her back. As she travels around America, she gets into more and more money troubles until she finally basically gives up and returns the kid to the father herself, telling the detectives they were too stupid to find her anyway, so she had to do it on her own. But in the end, everything ends well. Even though at that point Dietrich is all lost and she's given up her kid and she's poor, she ends up having a second career in Europe as another stage performer. As a famous stage performer, she ends up meeting Cary Grant again in Europe. He's a rich millionaire, which I should have mentioned in the beginning, which is why he can give her money, bunches of money. They end up marrying, and she goes back to the United States and goes to visit the kid and her ex-husband, and in the end she is reunited with him in a really weird scene that somehow basically undoes most of what's been going on in the movie by basically reuniting the whole family again. Right, so that's, I think, the plot. Maybe that was too long. I don't know. but that's what happens.
Maybe in the future, a briefer overview.
Yeah.
That's fine. Sure. We put him on the spot.
That was improvisation. Yeah.
It's the first time
plot
doing it, but
yeah,
it'll be more interesting when we watch stuff that's avant-garde and doesn't have a narrative.
Right.
The person trying to describe what happened.
It's gonna be good, yeah.
Anyways, so I really liked this film, and I think Ilya kind of got to what I really liked about this film, which is that basically sort of each scene or act made me think that it was a certain type of film, and then the next scene that followed it made me think it was a completely different type of film, basically through the end of the movie. Like, I was like, oh, okay, I've got a handle on what's going on now, and then it was just a completely different movie. And maybe that's just because it's an early piece of cinema and they're still, like, figuring things out, but I don't think that's the case. I think that Sternberg and the other filmmakers are really invested in sort of, like, pulling the rug out from under us over and over again. So I really liked it. Patrick?
I did not really like this movie. I was very bored with this movie. In particular, the first musical number that we see in it is very dated and has some very bad stereotyping problems. I thought the songs were all right, but other than Dietrich, like, performing and the times when she was, like, in the nightclubs, like, I didn't really like a lot of the other stuff that went on. I did like a little bit when she was, you know, kind of clearly, I guess, kind of vamping for the camera, but I didn't really connect with this movie at all, and I just felt really bored all the way up until the end, where the ending was just, like, confounding to me. I was just like, what? I was like, this doesn't make any sense, what is happening here at the end. So yeah, I was not a fan of this film.
I'm gonna say that I also didn't like it, although maybe not. I don't think I was ever exactly bored, but I didn't. Unlike Ruben, I didn't feel like the. I mean, I agree that you can't say that it's early cinema, because I've seen much earlier films that have a much more, like, linear and straightforward plot that's pretty easy to follow and kind of works with the conventional Hollywood narrative, and this doesn't, so I don't think that that's the case. But I feel less like it was intentional and more just that Joseph von Sternberg maybe doesn't care about plot and was just interested in showing Marlene Dietrich in a bunch of, like, crazy outfits and crazy, like, locations that... I mean, I thought the movie was really beautiful. It made me really sad that the copy I have is really low quality, because there's some really cool lighting stuff that was, like, some of my favorite parts, including later in the movie. There's a scene where she goes to, like, a flop house, and there's, like, a long, like, tracking shot that follows that, and there's stuff in the background and foreground, and it's all lit really beautifully.
Yeah.
And then, like, that scene's only, like, 2 minutes long, but it's really gorgeous, and it's interesting to, like, spend that much time lighting something that's, like, a fairly tiny portion of the movie. But anyway, I'll pass it on to Ilya to let him talk.
Alright. I went through a couple of stages of, like, dislike with this movie, I think, to be fair. I think it's...
Denial.
Anger. Yeah, exactly. Like, the post-breakup stages of... Yes. I thought that it first. I mean, I'll talk about, like, some of the things maybe later when we discuss the movie more in particular. But in general, I thought it veered between seeming really dated and incongruent, and, like, doesn't really know what it wants to be, and actually and being, like, unexpectedly progressive-minded. At times, I felt like Sternberg was definitely on Dietrich's side through all, or the movie was on her side through all this, like, misery that she's put through, mostly by any kind of man that she comes into contact with in the movie. And I thought that this is, like, the first time, I think, this is the first, like, Sternberg-Dietrich movie I've watched, and I got Marlene Dietrich for the first time with this movie. Like, I got what people might have, like, found really exciting about her, really interesting about her. And it was really in this, like, her weird way of showing emotion and her weird way of just being, like, somehow so much more confident and so much more assertive about who she is than the rest, but obviously that didn't really fit in with the role that she was given. And anyway, like, I thought that a lot of the times, I think the movie worked around certain things, especially like when we talk about the ending. This is, I think, on you can make an argument that what is shown and what you maybe expect to think about the ending is not really what the movie wants you to think about it. Like, there's some subversion going on at times, but that, you know, that can be argued. I was never really bored with it. I thought it actually flowed really well. I thought there were very few scenes where it was like nothing's going. There was a lot of stuff was going on, like, constantly, and that I really enjoyed. And I think this was one of the first movies with Cary Grant, right? Also, so
pretty thanks. Early.
Was it? Well, yeah, I don't know. Well, definitely one of the earliest ones. So thanks for that. Thanks for having more Cary Grant in our
thanks
lives.
Thanks for Cary Grant.
Yeah.
Is Cary Grant? I was gonna say, like, who's the actor that we've seen the most of in this podcast so far? Because I feel like we've seen. Is this the second Cary Grant movie that we've had?
This is the second Cary Grant movie.
Have we had any other actors or actresses twice?
I don't know.
I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
I don't know.
No idea.
It's the Cary Grant podcast.
Rihanna. Lots of Rihanna.
You can start making statistics if you want for all of our podcasts.
Now that we have 20 of them,
you know, based on country, race of director or producer.
That will help us.
How many writers were involved in the script?
It's true.
You know, you can be like the ESPN Sports Stat Zone or whatever, and just like put every possible thing into a database, and we can just pull it up whenever we do a podcast.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Okay.
I was gonna say, even though I didn't like the movie, I did think that it did some interesting visual things. There were several dissolves that I thought were really interesting, like. There's one at the beginning where it shows, you know, Marlene Dietrich and all the actresses that she's with are swimming in the, you know, the pond there, and it cuts from like a picture of like the women splashing to these like little legs splashing in the tub, and it's her son, and it's kind of a nice dissolve for like the passage of time. It's like, all right, here she is like swimming in the water, and now here's her son in the water, and she's, you know, bathing him. And then there's another dissolve that goes from, I think it's from like a newspaper headline, and then it dissolves into this weird face, and then you realize it's this mask that her son is wearing on like the side of his head, and you like see him like reading the paper or whatever, and he's like, is that your picture, mommy? And it's like he wears that mask throughout the entire scene, and you just like, you usually just see that side of his head with the mask like facing the camera. So like, I thought that there were some weird visual touches that were nice in this, but I guess just the story like didn't sustain me all that much. I
thought it was really weird as far as the story goes, like that it seemed to skip the part where there's development of any of the relationships. Like it was a lot of like people meeting each other and then like leaving each other, but there was like no middles ever. Like that dissolve confused me so much in the beginning, where it cuts to the baby and then there's like the husband, and I was like, is this the same guy? Like, go through the story where they talk about how they meet, and I was like, okay, that's a cool way to like bring in a bunch of backstory, but then like their relationship is in peril almost immediately, and I'm like, I'm not really emotionally invested in this yet. Like, it's hard for me to care that he's dying when like the last time I saw him, he was just being a creep trying to blackmail her into showing her nude body to him.
I thought that was kind of a cool. That was kind of a cool thing. I thought actually,
all right.
Because I mean, like, they're not supposed to care about him and his stupid death. You know, like it's not about him.
Since I'm the one who liked the movie a lot, I guess it's my job to defend it here. So the way that I see the movie is like. That first scene started off, and I was like, oh, this is gross. Like, she's telling him to go away, and he won't go away. And then, like, it immediately cuts, and they're, like, married, and they have, like, a really, like, sort of tender relationship with their child, and they're telling this, like, super romantic fairy tale about how they came together, which is, like, kind of ignores, in a way, what happened before. And you're like, oh, this is so sweet. And you're like, I'm for this relationship. And then, like, he gets sick, and you're like, this is just moving it, like, so fast. Like, this is, like, three different Hollywood movies, like, in the first 15 minutes of this movie. And she's like, I've got to have to take another job. And then she's in love with Cary Grant for, like, no reason. And I was like, huh, it kind of seems like she doesn't get to do anything, and, like, people just tell her what to do. Like, the guy shows up, and he's like, be in love with me. And then suddenly they're married, and they have a kid, and she should care for him. And then Cary Grant shows up, and he's like, you need this money. And she says she's in love with him, just like she says she's married. But, like, I kind of don't believe it. And then when she leaves, you know, and she goes on the road with her kid, it's like, when she actually makes a decision for herself, like, everything is terrible. Like, and, like, super stressful and the worst for her. Like, she's living on the edges. She starts having to, like, break the law. I believe it's, you know, implied that she becomes a prostitute at one point in order to survive. And, like, she gives up in a way because she's like, oh, women can't actually do anything in the world that we live in. Like, they basically just have to agree to some dude who comes along. And I felt like the ending sort of really hammered that home. It's like, so you've got kind of the Lady Eve moment, and that you've got a doubling of a scene that seemed kind of romantic the first time around. And then the second time around, in the Lady Eve, it's like funny and satirical, but in here, it's, you know, kind of depressing. And it's like, oh, this, you sort of get to this point from where, like, you really, I was, like, really into the scene. I was like, oh, this is such a sweet relationship. Like, and I had completely forgotten about the way that it started, just because that scene sort of, like, glosses over it intentionally. And then when you come back around to, you know, the kid wanting to hear the story again, it's kind of like, I don't know. I think about the idea of us trying to keep our children innocent for, like, as long as possible, and, like, not telling them about the realities of the world. And, like, that scene was kind of a really powerful way of saying, like, that's probably bad. And even if it's maybe good for the kid, like, it can be bad for the parents in a way. I don't know. I kind of felt like I hadn't ever seen stuff like that in a film. And to see it in a film from 1932, I was like, this is really surprising to me. So there's my defense.
I also like the movie, Ruben. Actually, I think I forgot to mention that, and that, like, I ended up...
It sounded like you thought it was okay, but I was confused.
I think, like, there are some things about it that really bothered me, and that were hard to just, like, skimp over, I guess. One of them being, like, this infamous song dance number called Hot Voodoo, which is just
quite infamous.
I guess you could argue.
I kind of feel like I could defend that as well.
Yeah, see, that's going to be interesting, because
not as well as I just defended the other thing, because I do think, I mean, at the end of the day, it is still, like, a white director co-opting.
Yeah.
Any time
imagery in order to comment on it.
Anytime I hear, like, you know, like, jungle drums and a musical number from a movie from the 30s, I'm always like, oh no.
Uh-oh. Here it goes.
I guess, like, oh, dear. So, like, what do you think of the, like, switch of the, like, extremely racist imagery of the gorilla, but then the gorilla takes off its mask and it's Marlene Dietrich, who is, like, Aryan beauty.
Well, it's like
don't you think that it's like a really weird moment?
It's like a weird inversion of this whole thing, where it's like women inside, women are, like, animalistic and have these urges, right? Like, it's this like Robin Thicke thing.
I didn't read that.
Still, you know, it's
I guess you could say that.
That's your nature, right? Your animalistic nature. So
I don't know if I saw that.
And then it just flips that around. It's like, it's the other way around. Inside every animal, there's a woman. Whatever, like that sort of thing.
A beautiful woman.
Yeah,
I like Ilya's.
Obviously, it's taking advantage. Like, it works on like a lot of weird levels, and like works in the sense of not like, oh, I like it. It works, but like it has that effect on a weird level. It's like it uses this sort of exoticism and like this like sordid, weird, dark nature of this like weird tribal-esque fucking number to create an idea that this is like a seedy, dangerous environment, and then like it's populated by all these savages, right? Because all the other women who are standing on stage next to Dietrich are portrayed as like, I think they're like painted, their faces are painted somehow, and they wear these shields and these like some kind of weapon or whatever they hold. And so it's playing around with this weird, like, the image of the savage, right? And then, like, Dietrich pops in there like this angel, like this white blonde angel, and it's supposed to, like, make that somehow, like, I don't know, that she kind of exists among them, which is a weird, maybe even some kind of commentary on her being German in America. You could, I guess, go there, as in, like, she's also... like racialized as this weird like European cabaret performer who's not really belongs here. It doesn't really belong here. But I don't know if you can really argue that.
Her Germanness is definitely part of her appeal. There's something like exotic and romantic about Germany before this, and then not so much during the Nazi era. But right. I mean, I feel like this was a little bit before like the whole idea of like Aryan thing had really taken over in Germany, so I don't think it could be like argued that von Sternberg is trying to make a comment on like
the idea that like blonde people, like sort of Icelandic people, were, I don't know, exotic and attractive though, is an idea that the Nazis co-opted. It's not an idea that they created.
Right.
That was colonialism.
Yeah. But I feel like, based on what I've read about von Sternberg, I've never heard anyone argue that he was, like, commenting on colonialism, only that he liked it a lot. he liked exotic locations because they were exotic, and that was sort of sexy. Like,
I haven't seen any other von Sternberg films, but I guess that, like, you know, to me, the way that scene felt, and I wasn't like 100% comfortable with it, but I wouldn't out and out like be like, this is a really awful scene, because to me it felt like another instance of people being forced to play the roles that are given to them by like power hierarchies, and like the idea that like Marlene Dietrich was like playing the racist stereotype in a way, instead of, you know, someone from that actual faux version of the culture. Like, to me, it like equated the two in a way. It's like, I would have cut the scene out.
Yeah.
If I were the producer of this film, I would have been like, this is either bad or at best sort of like a nod to a point that you don't really fully explain. Like, it's one of those two options where like you're equating other underrepresented, underprivileged people in the world, and you're equating them and being like, look, that Marlene Dietrich character that you also feel bad about, like, have you ever thought about these people and the way in which we take advantage of them and like tell them to play certain roles. But I would not include the scene in the movie.
I think one thing that might undermine that point is that both like there's like weird shots of like the black band leader like smiling really big, and also there's the barman who's like a very much like a black stereotype of like the stuttering, like, here you go, here's your drink, like kind of.
Yeah, I forgot about that guy. That bothered me too.
Him actually, like, this is also like you could, I guess, in a weird way, try and make it an argument for the fact that he's talking to that other dancer girl, Taxi, right? And there, she's talking to him, and is like asking him about something, and like he's like overcoming his stutter to tell her that thing, and it's like you see it's shot in a way where it's just her and him, and the rest don't really matter. So in a way, it's like trying to set her and him as a kind of as equals, and in a way, like the movie keeps having this weird idea where like later Marlene Dietrich actually bumps into Hattie McDaniel or whatever, right? She doesn't bump into her, but like Hattie McDaniel helps her take care of the kid, and Hattie McDaniel was pretty famous for all those like for the mammy stereotype, for playing mammy stereotypes.
Mammy roles, yeah.
And but Marlene in like the movie is like the one person who is like, again, like sort of on her side or whatever. Like, it's weird. Like, I think Sternberg is trying to make an argument for like the fact that they're both outsiders somehow, but obviously I think he's also overlooking,
I mean, that's what I took from it.
Yeah, all right, but it's also obviously overlooking a lot of the structure that's still there that still make Marlene obviously still like in the society that she is in still like superior to someone like Hattie McDaniel. I guess economically, they're kind of like, in the end, she ends up like somewhere there. Actually, I was kind of expecting the Flophouse to sort of to be full of black people. Like, I was, in the end, I was kind of thinking that Sternberg is going to go there, because there's a comment when the detective comes to visit Dietrich, or not to visit her, but like he tries to hit on her, and then he says something, and then he says something like, "You don't look like the other women do here." And it's like implied that she's in this weird, like, in this town where there's like a, it's like a border town or something, and there are like a lot of brown people around, and it's like, oh, you don't look like them. And she says something like, give me some time, you know, just give me a little time and I will, or whatever, like that's implied. So the idea is that she will like become one of those outsider people, or she is like one of those.
Isn't she in Texas at that point?
She's trying to get to Mexico.
So it's weird. The way the movie treats this is like, I think it's trying to be sympathetic and then still being racist, maybe without an explicit intention, but just by nature of the way it depicts certain people. Like, maybe despite itself, I don't know.
I mean, I have stuff that I could still say, but I just talked a lot. If Basil and Patrick want to jump in.
I mean, to what Basil was saying earlier about not being able to emotionally connect with the characters, I really felt like that was the main point that put me off on the movie. Like, it started off doing that, and so I was immediately just not able to connect emotionally with what was happening. And so I lost interest in, you know, the overall plot really quickly. I was just kind of like, okay, like, what's, you know, where are we going from here? Like, we've started at zero, and I don't think that I'm going to be that emotionally invested from here on out. And I certainly wasn't. Like, you know, there's a scene where she's sort of been away on a holiday with Cary Grant while her husband's in Germany, and she's expecting her husband to come back on a certain date. And then she comes back to the house and finds the note that says, "Hey, I'm coming back early." And he's obviously been there for a while, and she's like, "Oh no." And I think we're supposed to feel, you know, kind of...
That's a perfect summary of her reaction. Oh, no.
I know. I think we're supposed to feel some emotion, like, you know, maybe like, oh, gasp, you know, but, you know, we don't at all. Like, it's... And I don't even think the movie...
Don't
like,
speak for everybody.
Okay, well, the movie doesn't even, like, give you that moment. That the movie isn't even, like, you know...
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's invested enough in that moment. And for me, like, it kept feeling that way throughout the movie. It never felt like it was invested enough in the emotions of the story to, you know, make me feel invested in them. And especially, like, towards the end, where I was really confused about the motivations of Marlene Dietrich's character after she becomes, like, a big success in Paris. And then Cary Grant comes to see her, and he's like, hey, you could come back to the States with me and see your kid. And she's like, she's like acting really flippant, and she's like, I wouldn't even get on that train or whatever like that, something like that. And like, she's completely, you know, like, closed off to that at that point. And then the next scene is like, you know, she's coming back to the States and marrying Cary Grant. It's just like, well, you've just made that jump again. Like, you haven't put in the work to convince her to come back at this point. Like, I didn't understand, like, why I kept, you know, jumping all of the emotional connections to the scenes. Like, the scenes didn't feel emotionally connected to one another. It felt like, here's a new scene and here's the emotion that they're feeling. Like, it had to explain the emotion they were feeling to us, you know, instead of, like, showing us that, you know, that emotional change in those characters throughout the film. And so that, it felt really dissonant to me. I was like, I don't understand why they keep, you know, like, shortchanging us.
What about
us
when he gives her the money back and he's like, I could have made a lot of money off of this, but I sold it, and it's your fault. About his, like, thing. And he's like, here's your $1,500, you whore.
Yeah, well,
whatever. And then she was like, in the very next scene, the other woman's like, I'm going to kill myself because I don't have any money. And then, like, she's like, I have some money. And then she just repeats what her ex-husband said
that
to her.
That was so good.
You didn't feel emotionally about that?
I love that scene.
I was already checked out.
Well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
I was checked out at that point. I was checked out so hard on the movie. Like, I was like,
I'm going to actually say that I'm on the same side as Patrick, and that, like, to me, I didn't feel that the movie was that weird, in that it seemed like it kind of embraced the 30s melodrama thing, which is that, like, a woman has something terrible happen to her, and then she has to, like, struggle through that terrible thing, and then on the end she, like, comes out, like, back into the normal life. Like, I didn't feel that it was really subverting that stereotype very much. Like, it seemed very structurally similar to Stella Dallas, but, like, without the emotional scenes in the middle, which is a movie I like a lot. But, like, that, like, yeah, that repetition of one thing to the other, at that point, it just, the whole plot seemed more built on contrivances and, like, scenes to have Marlene Dietrich feel this way. Like, there's, like, the Bon Voyage thing where she's saying goodbye to her husband, and they're, like, watching the train go by, and it's, like, swelling music, and she's crying, and I'm like, but I don't care about this guy at all. And it didn't feel like it was intended to be ironic. It felt like the movie kind of feels to me like a Broadway review of Marlene Dietrich, as, like, here's her in this scene, and here's her in this scene, and now she's happy, and now she's sad, and doesn't she have all this range, and now she's angry in this flop house. Like, none of the things landed to me because they didn't, I don't know, to me it didn't feel like it had the intention behind it that that Ruben saw. I wasn't convinced that Sternberg was as progressive as Ruben believes. I hope you're right.
Well, I'm not.
That'd be cool.
It's important to remember that I'm not an auteurist, so I actually kind of don't care about what Sternberg wanted to do, and I care more about how it worked for me. And you're probably know more about, like, Sternberg. It's like actual, like, history and context, and therefore could probably make a better argument than me.
I know only a little.
Kind of like it's kind of like our friend Dan Shake and I once got in like a little argument, and he said that, like, sometimes I give like the best possible reading to a film, like, which was like the nice way of like saying like you're wrong, but like in a really sweet way. Like that I just sort of take out of it, like I'm like, oh, you know, because like what you guys were saying, it was so beautifully shot that like I wouldn't really have any problem with the idea that I was like, oh, this is so aesthetically pleasing that I'm going to create a reasoning in my head why it is good and works.
Well, I think that's okay as long as you can make decent arguments for it. I mean, that's fine.
Isn't it really aesthetically pleasing?
It's a really beautiful movie. Like, it made me so angry that the copy that I got was so shitty looking.
And I watched the same copy that Basil had because he lent me his, so, yeah.
Yeah. I want a nice Blu-ray, sweet. Like
I definitely wanted to watch more Joseph von Sternberg after this.
Right.
Me too.
So
like, there's a bunch of his movies on my list.
Sure.
Including his silent movies,
One weird thing that keeps happening in the movie, this happens twice, it actually happens both times when Melanie Dietrich basically says no to a guy, and then the next shot is her being with that guy. First time it happens when Herbert Marshall is like, hey, so you wanna like, you could I meet you later? And she's like, no. So okay, but then I'm gonna hang out here. And she's like, no, please go. Okay, I'm not gonna go. And the next shot is her washing his baby. Right? So it's like, oh, okay. So she didn't get her way. And then it happens the second time when Cary Grant does it.
It happens three times.
Oh, three times.
Because it happens to Cary Grant twice. It happens to Cary Grant twice.
Right,
right,
right.
The first time she meets him in the club, she's like, I'm married. And the second time she meets him in the club, she's like, you ruined my life, go away.
It's a great thing to say to somebody.
So, like, to me, like, the repetitiveness of it made me feel like it was intentional.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. I felt
that way,
though.
If it had happened, like, once or twice in the movie, like, what you guys are saying, like, about it being manipulative, like, I agree that it was, you know? And then, like, so, but because it kept happening, I kept asking, who's being manipulated, I guess? And to me, it felt like Marlene Dietrich's character was the one who was being manipulated. There was kind of, like, almost every scene ended with her saying, like, I don't want to do this. And then the next scene was her doing it.
Right. Yeah.
That seems fair.
Which is why I think
I got loud because the guy left.
Right, nice. I thought, which this is why I like the scene in the Flophouse best, I guess, because to me, and the scene before that with the detective is where she is showing full awareness of that she has no control over pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. Even though she is pretty good at what she does, she can't even really use that to get anywhere. And then,
she's not making choices. What she's good at is hiding.
Yeah, right. But then somehow she still becomes the star in Europe, right? Because this is another thing where maybe what you said in the beginning makes sense, because it's like, oh, right, I think I get this movie, right? Yes, yeah, she's good, but she can't really, it doesn't really work for her. And then it works. It's like she's given away even the money that her husband has given her, so she has no money. And then she's like, okay, you know what, I'm just going to sleep with guys who are going to keep giving me money because that's how it works, so I've figured it out and I embrace it now. Mm-hmm. Right, because then when Cary Grant is about to watch her perform in the end, I think his friend or something tells him like, yeah, she's been sleeping with all these guys. She doesn't say sleeping, but she's been with all these guys. And she's like climbing the ladder, and now she's like a big star. So I guess to her it's like, okay, you know what, if it really doesn't work in any other way, so I'm just gonna do this. And I guess that's like the moment where she embraces it, is like the moment she becomes like really aware of that, of her own situation. And it's kind of tragic in a way.
I think I would have liked the movie more if I felt there was more ambivalence in the final scene, because it does, like, if it had ended sadly, I think that, like, either I was expecting it either to end in the flop house or then after she's a big star for her to like not go back with Cary Grant and her to just be like, well, this is the way the world works now. I can't be with my son because like I'm a broken woman in society's eyes and that's not fit to be a parent. But then I think that the very final scene feels a little tacked on and is like arguing that, you know, with enough sentiment the son can kind of bring them back together, and I didn't feel the
a woman can always go back to being a housewife.
But
that was kind of I didn't feel good about it because that's what I got out of it. It was like, you know, this is what is this is what is good. Like, this is what is ultimately good in society. And like, being your own person and being independent is not good for a woman. That was kind of how I felt about it. It was like, she needs to come back to her family.
Because she can't really be independent, though. Isn't that like the whole point? Like, she realizes that the only way to be independent is to basically climb this ladder and be with all these men who don't really mean anything, because she can't really do it on her own. And then in the end, Cary Grant comes back to her, which is probably like the one guy of all these guys who she had some kind of affection for, I guess. And he says, like, well, you know what? Marry me, because I know what's good for you. You need your son back. And she's like, well, okay, fine. I need my son back. Then it's that. You know what? I can't even make any more decisions. Fine. So let's do that then. And then they go over there. And, like, the way this ending is
shot... That's a lot closer to how I felt about it.
Yeah. It's like the way the ending is shot, actually, is so weird because, like, it doesn't make any sense... Because Cary Grant is like, you know what? I'll leave the car here. She'd just go over here. It's like, it makes so much sense for her to just be with the kid and then go away. And then the son is all like, well, I just want this. I want this, please. You know, I want this happy, happy ending. And it's like, great, because the son can be like a total stand-in for the audience or whatever. Or for the whoever forced that ending on Sternberg.
I thought the ending was her son is now starting to become exactly like his father and like Cary Grant. Like, he wants a thing, and she just has to give it to him, regardless of whether and what she wants.
Yeah, that's good.
He's like, you know, he's just another man. He's just like, I want you guys to be together and for there to be a happy ending. And she's like, we hate each other. Like, I have never liked him.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, she did like
okay,
him, I guess.
For you.
He just turned out to be a huge jerk, but,
I don't know. So I think of three different movies in which something is repeated. One being The Lady Eve, which I mentioned before. Another one being this, and a third one being The Conversation. And for me, The Lady Eve repetition actually works the best because it's the one where they deliver it with the least amount of change from the first time it appears to the second time. There's some other people, like, so in The Lady Eve, Henry Fonda delivers a romantic speech to Barbara Stanwyck, right? And it's really romantic. And then later in the movie, he delivers the exact same speech to Barbara Stanwyck playing a different person. She's pretending to be a different person as, like, a horse, like, pokes him in the back a bunch. and I think that scene works the best because it lets the audience be like, oh, this is weird. And one of the things that I actually like didn't like about this movie and didn't like about the ending is that I kind of felt like it was like making it a little clear, like, oh, like she's like really sad and he's like really like the dad is like, oh, this is the worst, as he's like telling the story and like forcing him to tell the story. Like, I thought it would have been really creepy if like they told the story exactly how they told it in the beginning.
Yeah.
Where, like, they didn't have to be prodded on by the son. And that was something that I didn't like. And, again, with The Conversation, like, the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, it's so crazy that this same conversation has so many different meanings throughout the film. And then I found that Walter Murch recorded it, like, 75 times. And that, like, he's using, like, different versions of the recording of the same conversation over and over again. I'm like, oh, that's part of why it has different meanings, is because, you know,
it literally does.
It's read differently. I was like, oh, so that was a little disappointing, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was hoping that, well, I mean, I guess that would be a different reading, but it seemed like they weren't going to give in to the thing. Because, like, yeah. The husband is very standoffish through the whole thing and keeps insisting. And then it's not until, like, Marlene Dietrich starts, like, singing the song that he's like, okay, you're right, we should be together. Like, it seems weird that she it's the son and then Dietrich and then the father that, like, is the order in which they give in to it. Like,
I thought that that was the most cynical part of the whole thing, because, like, her independence, in a way, is based on her being a performer and singing. And then, like, this scene more or less says, you know what you should use your singing for? This. Making your husband happy.
I really like that, Ilya. Yeah. I really like what you just said there. Yeah.
So, like,
that is a pretty great reading.
In a way, that's a horrible, horrible... horrible, cynical way of like saying, you know, like, you know, that's what you're good for. So, yeah.
Yeah. And like, I guess another thing, so two things. One, you know, I know we've moved away from this topic a lot, but I wanted to make it clear that I do think the film is racist, but I think it's racist in a different way than you guys do, which is that I don't really think that white guys should co-opt racist imagery in order to, you know, undo it. Like, that is a job for the people who are actually being put upon. Like, white guys should just make good characters. That's the way that they should, in my opinion, how they should undo racism, is that they should just make, you know, good minority characters and just, like, have them be, like, reasonable people,
right?
You know, it's kind of like, to me, it's kind of like when someone is like, oh, I'm going to use this slur because it's just a word, and, you know, I'm going to undo racism by, like, now everybody can say it so it doesn't hurt people. And it's like, well, no, you don't have that relationship with it. You can't get, you're not the one who gets to undo it. It's got to be somebody else. So that's the way in which I thought that scene was racist. I was like, oh, this is really interesting, but, like, you shouldn't do it.
Right. Yeah. I think we all agree on that, though.
I believe it. I believe it.
I think Basil thinks he's just straight up racist.
Oh.
Well, I mean, it's more just, like, based on my knowledge of him, I feel like he's sort of, like, a sexual director. Like, he's like, I find Marlene Dietrich hot, like, we're making a movie with her being hot in a lot of different outfits.
Yeah.
And, like, that he thinks that, like, exotic stuff is sexy, so he's like, let's put Marlene Dietrich, who's sexy, in a bunch of locations that are also sexy, and we'll make a real sexy movie. And, yeah. I mean, I agree that there's more ambivalence to it than that, but I don't know. I mean,
it's called Blonde Venus.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't see, like, the thing is, like, I don't know if I would argue that it's von Sternberg who adds this element to me. I really like Marlene Dietrich. Mm-hmm. Like, this might be a shitty movie that Marlene Dietrich makes really good through her performance.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was sort of my other point, is that, like, so the first time that they tell the bedtime story, I'm like, oh, this is really sweet and tender. And then, like, I paused the movie and I was like, wait, why do I think that? Because she kind of acts like she's not into it, like, the whole time. Right? And then again, like, when she's with Cary Grant and they're riding the horses or whatever, and he's like, I love you, I need you, I wish we could be together, and she's like, yeah, I wish that too. And, like, her sort of, like, yeah, distance from, like, everything that's going on is, to me, what gives me this reading for the story. I'm like, damn, like, yeah, this is the second movie that I've seen her, and the first one was Touch of Evil.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm like, I'm really impressed with Marlene Dietrich. I'm like,
me too.
She can carry a scene like nobody's business.
Yeah. I really love, by the way, like, the shot where you just said, like, her, like, she can act this even without saying anything, just through looking. And one of my favorite shots in the whole movie is when Cary Grant is like, oh, your husband is coming back, right? Well, let's go on a vacation. We have to go on a vacation. She's like, okay. And then there's a shot of them in the boat, and they're just sitting together, and this boat is just going somewhere, and that's the whole vacation, basically. It's like a shot of that boat going somewhere, and she's just sitting there, and she's, like, staring off into the distance, like, oh, like, God, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, what is this? I'm just, what am I doing with my life? And it's just so great, like, that one shot just basically sums up all those conflicted feelings, and just like makes them just through like just I don't know, just like I hate everything, you know, like you can really feel it in your face. And I think that, yeah, that's one of the reasons why I said, like, this movie really made me totally fall for her. Like, I'm totally on the Marlene Dietrich love train now.
Yeah. I feel like both Basil and I have to go soon, so let's Patrick say what he wants to say.
Oh, I was just going to say that, yes, I also love the way that she sings. I love that she's not, like, a typical, like, you know, songbird. She's more like... She's got kind of this, like, vampy sexiness. Like, she, you know, pronounces her R's as W's, and she has a very odd way of singing that's very, it's very endearing, and it's very unique, and I really like it. And I know that this is, I also kept thinking of Madeline Kahn in Blazing Saddles, who I know is exactly who she's.
I think she's kind of a parody.
That's what. Yes, she's actually like, yeah, she's supposed to sound like Marlene Dietrich. So yes, that's. I found it very funny. I was like, yeah, that's spot on parody. Like, that's exactly how she sings. You whittle so and so.
Yeah, yeah, that was good, Patrick.
I did love her singing. I thought her singing was great.
I liked it too.
Okay. Does anyone have anything else they want to say? I feel like we could talk about it.
Yeah,
more,
I think so too. But if you guys got to run, you got to run.
This ended up being much more interesting and fruitful than I was expecting, given the movie that I felt I watched when I first watched it.
Awesome.
That's what we're here for.
I try to watch every movie with the eyes of the person who enjoyed it. Oh, you enjoyed this movie? I'll just pretend that I'm that person, and now I can enjoy it.
Let me borrow your eyes. Yes.
Watch Olympus Has Fallen.
Just like Tom Cruise.
Yeah. I don't know anybody who enjoyed Olympus Has Fallen. Basil enjoyed the first 5 minutes, which I would probably say I also enjoyed the first 5 minutes. So?
I haven't watched the rest.
I did.
I probably never will, but those first 5 minutes, they were pretty good.
Yeah. I don't think I was as into them as Basil was, but I was like, this is nice. Anyway.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is our discussion of Blonde Venus, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.